with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Skinny on Sports podcast. This is going to be the third day in succession that we will have Skinny on Sports podcast without Jared. And that is undoubtedly a record in the nearly 7 years that this show has been on the air when he's been gone. So kudos to me. And you know what? Scott and Sam had been sending me texts to remind me to do that. The first couple of days, they slipped on their duties, as did I. But we got it going right now. Okay, let's talk first small school baseball. We hit on it a little bit yesterday, but weren't able to kind of tell you exactly where everybody slotted from a ranking standpoint. There's some really good teams. You know, I've talked about what the Elks have done so far, and obviously Cash Mayfield and what he's done. But it's not just the Big Elks. There's tons of good baseball all around Western Oklahoma right now, from 4A all the way down to Class B. And that's proven in the rankings. You know, we constantly harp throughout the basketball season about, you know, the Western Oklahoma teams and getting to the Big House and how there's some teams that are kind of staples. Baseball is no different, and maybe even more loaded from a quantity standpoint. Because you look in Class A, there's six teams within earshot that are inside the top 20. And a bunch of those teams have outstanding, all of them have outstanding records. It starts with Arapahoe Butler. The Indians ranked number 10 this week, undefeated, 8-0. I know talking with Cud over the fall when our younger kids are playing together, I know they're very excited about the youth and what's coming over there at Arapahoe Butler, and it's starting to make an impact there as the Indians, number 10, 8-0. Canute, you know, Jared talked all year about how young they were on the basketball floor. A bunch of those guys play baseball as well. They're number 12 at 7-1. Hydro Weekly still undefeated at number 14 at 7-0. Sentinels suffered their first loss yesterday to Leedy, but they're still number 15 in Class A, 7-1. Hollis has played a ton of games, and they've done a fantastic job with them. They're number 17 in Class A at 16-2. And then Shattuck at number 18 in Class A, 8-1. They actually beat a team we're going to talk about here in just a second on the Class B side yesterday with beating number 8 Granite, for handing Granite their second loss. Class B, you know, Calumet's number 1, Fort Cobb number 2, and then you got Navajo. Navajo is a team that it doesn't surprise me whatsoever that you see Navajo start to show up, and they have been for a while, and they're going to stay there for a while because just with the ages of the kids that I've seen over the past 3, 4, 5 years up here at the Fiveplex in the summertime, with those Navajo teams that are now starting to filter into junior high, maybe some of them even as freshmen, Navajo is going nowhere. And they're ranked number 7 in Class B, 5-1. They've got it rolling down there, and it would not surprise me whatsoever to see them start to go on long, sustained runs of year after year after year in the state tournament. Granite, taking the basketball success on the baseball field, they're number 8 at 5-2. Leedy's 5-3, number 12. They've got a couple of really good wins the last couple of outings against a ranked Visi team and then a ranked Sentinel team. Hammond's number 13 at 3-4. Visi 5-4 at number 14, and then Blair is number 18 at 8-1. So if you like to watch, if you're one of those baseball people that's kind of frustrated with what you're seeing on the TV, get out. There's plenty and tons of good high school baseball right here within earshot. It's everywhere. It can be the smallest schools up to the biggest schools around. There's a lot of good baseball being played out there. And so if you have time, if you want to do that, there's lots and lots and lots of options to find really good high school baseball in Western Oklahoma, Northwestern Oklahoma, Southwestern Oklahoma. It's everywhere. It's everywhere around us. So go check that. You can easily go check tons of that out all across the area. Big Elks yesterday, it wasn't easy. It looks easy on a 12-3 run rule at Bridge Creek. But the truth of it is the Elks were down 3-1 heading into the bottom of the fifth, and then they put three on the board to take the lead into the sixth, and then scored eight runs in the bottom of the sixth to end up blowing out Bridge Creek 12-3, moved to 9-1. I'm trying to remember. Let's see. MacArthur had three hits. A bunch of guys had two. With Bowie, Mayfield. I think maybe Wyatt McConnell might have had two. I can't remember who all. There were some guys that had two hits. Bryce Mouse went five innings, gave up three runs on four hits. I think he walked three, struck out five, and then Bowie came in and actually gets the win on the hill with a perfect sixth inning before the Elks bats exploded there in the bottom of the sixth to win. So 2-0 down in Southeast Oklahoma for the Big Elk baseball team. They've got Duncan today. That looks like it could be a pretty tough matchup. Duncan, a 5A school. They started out 7-1 so far in the season. So good stuff, though, from the Brown and White down in Southeast Oklahoma. And I mentioned Mayfield already with Cash Mayfield, another younger guy in the college ranks that had an unbelievable week so far. Ryder Cowan, he was on the show this summer. He almost made history back in the summertime, winning the OGA Junior on the golf course, winning the State Am, almost winning or the stroke play. He won the stroke play, almost won the State Am. Nobody had ever done that that trifecta. Coming off an individual and a team state title for his OCS team there in May. He's gone to OU, and, man, he has made an immediate impact as a true freshman on one of the most consistently excellent college golf teams that's been there. Oklahoma has been fantastic for the better part of at least a decade now on the college golf scene. Yesterday out in California, Ryder finishes up, shoots two under yesterday, three-round total of five under par, which is good enough to tie fifth overall. So just, you start to think about the possibilities with him just getting his college career going. Obviously, I've highlighted Quade Cummins a bunch. Quade on the Corn Ferry Tour feels like he's starting to kind of find his sea legs on that tour. He's number nine in the points, which if he can continue to play as well as he has right now, you're going to see him on the PGA Tour. Is that something that we might see in the cards for Ryder at some point in the future? And then, of course, Cash. I mean, I think sky's the limit coming up in the spring, later on in the spring, as far as, you know, what he can do to help Big Elk baseball. But then also, you know, is he a guy that never even goes to college? You know, I think it's just it's a really cool time. I can't remember that many high-level guys with Western Oklahoma roots all at the same time. I just can't remember there being, you know, three of those guys that could end up being on the international stage at some point here. So it's a really cool, fun, exciting time. And, you know, congrats to Ryder as he's done what you hoped he would do at OU after having such a great amateur career, a great high school career, but you never really know exactly how that transfers over. And so far, man, it's transferred amazingly for him. As you know, he played really well in the fall at the Big 12 match play tournament down in Houston a couple weeks ago, coming off a tie 21, which is at that point was his best finish of his career. And then this week tied for fifth, leading the Sooners to a fourth place team finish. Vanderbilt was the winner, San Diego second, Oklahoma State was the third place team, and actually Jonas Baumgartner was the individual medalist at that tournament from OSU. But you know, he doesn't have the local cachet, I guess, as what Ryder Cowan does. So congrats to him. Just a really cool thing to see his college golf career start as fantastic as it has. So good stuff from the local guys on a state and a national and even international level. And I think that's only going to continue to get even better and better and better as some of those guys get a little bit older. It's time to talk college football portal. Did you see the story? Caden Proctor. I mean, listen, I know there's a lot of people out there that absolutely love the portal, absolutely love the player movement and the players having the ability to kind of do what the coaches do. That's always been the argument. When you say, oh, gosh, you need if a player transfers, they ought to have to sit out a year. Well, what about the coaches? They don't have to. And so that's been a little bit of the argument that was made. And unfortunately, like almost anything, does anybody even remember what NIL was designed to do? from the very get-go why there was a lawsuit that got all the way to the Supreme Court? It was to make some money off of a football or a basketball game. Just give the guys a little walk and change. And now when it does come to them, you got people opting out because they didn't enough. And it was not designed to lure players to come play. It was designed to almost be a benefit to the guys that are playing that are recognizable. I mean, Nick Saban talked at length about this at Capitol Hill on his own. You know, his point was, yes, Bryce Young was able to gain popularity and gain financially because of the fame, but it was because of the fame that he created for himself at Alabama as the Heisman Trophy winner. Caleb Williams was all over your TV screen in the fall. But guess what? He was the Heisman Trophy winner, the returning Heisman Trophy winner coming back for another season of college football. What I'm saying is they earned that money. They earned NIL money because their name, image, and likeness was something that companies felt was recognizable enough to pay them some money, not to lure them through the transfer portal. And so that brings us to Caden Proctor. Caden Proctor, if you don't know his story, he grew up in Iowa. In June of 2022, he committed to the Hawkeyes. He's a big left tackle, 6'8", 300, however many pounds. Commits to the hometown Hawkeyes in June of 2022, going into what his senior year of high school would have been. 2 days before signing day in December of 2022, he flips to Alabama. And he signs with Alabama. He goes to Alabama. And then this last fall, he starts every game as a true freshman tackle for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Then in January, on the 17th of January of this year, he jumps in the portal. On January 20th of this year, he announces he is going to transfer to Iowa. Okay. He had a great season. Maybe the collective or whatever from Iowa put together some money. Oh, yeah, he's going home, playing for the hometown Hawkeyes. Until yesterday, to where now he has headed back to Alabama. Of course, there's a joke out there that he wanted to be closer to his hometown of Iowa to watch Caitlin Clark play basketball. Okay, haha, that's funny. The point is, though, I wonder, there's already one of the guys from the Swarm is the Iowa Collective. He's already been on the radio this morning up in Iowa assuring all the Hawkeye fans that Caden Proctor did not make very much money from the Swarm, at least from the donations from the fans, more the corporate side of the donations, which of course he's going to say because he's still trying to get money rolling in for whoever the next Caden Proctor is. But I guess the point is, to me, there's a few things at work here. As soon as Saban announced his retirement, a lot of people fled Alabama, Caden Proctor included. And there was conversations right here on these airways, right here on this show. Is this the turning point for Bama? Is this the end? Is Camelot crumbling? So then Saban goes up to Capitol Hill a couple of weeks ago, kind of testifies in front of a hearing, tells his side of the story and all that. And basically, it turns into nothing to where, essentially, on Capitol Hill, he figures out the NCAA is useless. They have no teeth. Because if they try to do something, they're just going to get sued, and whoever sues them is going to win. That's the way this whole thing has happened throughout the entirety of this process to get us to where we are in the NIL. And so Saban, I think Saban realizes, you know what? It doesn't matter. There are no rules. And now all of a sudden, are we going to see all these guys come back that left Bama because he's just going to go scorched earth? You know, he owns different things. Is there a chance that the GM of Alabama football is now Nick Saban, and he may have even figured out how to be more powerful? Is this like Obi-Wan getting struck down on the Death Star to become more powerful to help Luke? off the field than he could on it. And plus, he doesn't have to put up with the headache of dealing with, say, a guy like him as the head coach. Instead, he can just back away and influence Alabama football to an even higher extent by realizing that he can use all of his power and all of his fame and maybe even some of his money to make Alabama even better. I don't know. And then you also got to think, when you start to see these things happen, I mean, Caden Proctor didn't even play a snap in spring football for Iowa. But with the portal opening back up on April the 15th, after the spring practices basically end all around the country, are we going to start seeing guys almost use spring practice as an audition? Like, say, it's name your guy. After the season, after the bowl or what have you, transfer, go to spring practice, see what it's all about, and then decide, nah, you know what, I had it better where I was. And go back? Is this just a total anomaly from Caden Proctor to actually go back to Alabama, or are we going to see a lot of guys jump in the portal, see if the grass is greener on the other side, decide it's not, and then look back and go, will you take me back? Will schools take them back? And how much devastation is this causing to the rosters when it happens? There's no recourse now. You know, if you lose guys before the first signing day in December, okay, you can try to figure that out with high school kids or figure that out with portal kids. Then it happens again. It opens back up and, pre-spring, and there's a second signing day. But, man, if this happens, you're talking about April 15th, and your roster kind of gets decimated by defections at that point, there's not a ton you can do about it. And that's where I think the sport has lost its way. Does it have to be where guys have to stay and all that? Absolutely not. But like for Caden Proctor, how in the world is he able to go in 2 months, transfer twice, and have zero recourse? How much money did they pay him? And if you're any of these big-time guys, why wouldn't you take the NIL dollars if they're going to be put to you like that? Take it and then go back to where you really wanted to play. The system's flawed, and there's not anything that's going to be able to fix it, at least right now it doesn't look like, because anytime the NCAA wants to fix something, they just get sued and lose in the court of law. And so it's the wild, wild west in college football, and it's going to be that way until somebody somewhere can try to figure out a way to get a hold of the reins. Because right now, it's like in those westerns where you see the cowboy sliding down the horse and it's just running wild down through the wilderness, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing anybody can do about it right now. And you wonder, is there anything that anybody's trying or wants to do about it right now? We're going to talk NCAA tournament next, but for the tournament, man, you could have went last night, tonight, and then, of course, tomorrow. And tomorrow, if this was tomorrow, about an hour and a half away from March Madness kicking off, your March Madness headquarters needs to be the Boomtown Grill. Do you know what an old-fashioned is? Everybody knows what an old-fashioned, the drink. Well, guess what? Down at Boomtown, their house favorite drink is the smoked old-fashioned. It's the classic cocktail with the modern seasonal smoky twist. It's not just drinks, though. There's food, burgers, sandwiches, wraps. Appetizers are fantastic. I love the Boomtown nachos, the grilled chicken on there. They are just fantastic. Happy hour 2 to 6, Monday through Friday. Open 11 to 10 on Sunday through Thursday. 11 to 11, Friday and Saturday. That is the Boomtown Grill, hanging out on a Wednesday before the madness starts. March Madness. In full force tomorrow, we would be about an hour and, oh, I don't know, an hour and 40 minutes away from the tip of the tournament getting started if this was tomorrow. So looking forward to seeing, you know, college basketball's crown jewel. Don't forget Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge, ESPN website, Skinny on Sports Facebook page. I have a link posted there. It's free to play. It's fun to play. And oh, by the way, if you win, you've got cash coming your way. $500 for the winner of the Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. $200 for second, $100 for third. And maybe, just maybe, a little master swag as well thrown in as a little extra to the cash prizes. We'll see see how that goes, the ability to make that happen. But get involved. You've got 25 hours and 30 minutes, let's say, before the brackets will be locked in. And then at that point, you'll be locked out. You don't want to make that happen. So come join us. You can find that link on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. I'll post it again today, and I'll post it again in the morning. That way, it'll make it easier for everybody to get involved. People before property is the motto of Western Oklahoma Realty. We appreciate Tyler, Robbie, and all the gang down at Western Oklahoma Realty. All right, NCAA tournament. The one team, there wasn't a lot of discussion, even with Oklahoma being a team that was on the bubble that got burst and were outside of the field of 68. There still wasn't a ton of emotion or a ton of vigor about, you know, OU not making it or whoever else not making it, because I think we've kind of gotten to a point with 68 teams involved in the big dance that if you can't be one of the top 68 or turns out to be one of the top 36 at-large teams, then what are you griping about? Go win a couple more games and you'll be fine. But the one team that people had some question marks about was Virginia. And the Cavaliers last night in Dayton in the first four took on the Colorado State Rams and, quite frankly, embarrassed the sport of college basketball, which is really hard to do at this point because of how bad the play really is. Virginia scores 14 points in the first half. At one point, missed 19 straight shots. And they lose 67-42. And every single person, and there were tons going into the tournament that said, of all the teams, if you really want to start nitpicking, Virginia is the one that should not have been in. Either Oklahoma, Seton Hall, St. John's, Indiana State, whoever you wanted to replace them with, Virginia should have been out. One of those teams should have been in. And they were 100% proven right last night for anybody and everybody that had that opinion. I think it also comes at a pretty interesting time with the discussion of expanding the tournament. Expand for that? You're telling me there's worse teams than that that you want to get in the NCAA tournament and water it down even further? No, thank you. How about put it back to 64 and don't let Virginia play? It was embarrassing. They were absolutely horrible. And they have one of the most remarkable kind of stretches of NCAA tournament that I can remember. And basically, it's all awful except for the 1 year. So in 2017, they lost to Florida 65-39, just barely getting to 40. Didn't even get to 40 points that time, unlike the 42 last night. But that was a second-round loss. Then in 2018, they become the first, and at that time, you didn't even think it was possible, but they become the first 16 or number one seed to lose to a 16 when they lost to UMBC. That was 18. Then all of a sudden in 2019, they win the national title. Now, if you remember, there were a couple of different things that happened along the way that were almost unbelievable to see. You know, there was a play at the end going into the Final Four where missed the free throw, gets knocked back in the backcourt, and somehow get it into the front court, make a shot. Then the foul while they're in the Final Four, in the semifinal against Auburn, where they shoot a three, miss it at the buzzer, but get a foul, make three free throws and move on, and they end up winning the national title. Then COVID happens. They don't have a tournament in 2020. 2021, they lose to a 13 seed, Ohio. They missed the tournament altogether in 22. Then last year, they lose to another 13 seed in Furman. And then this year, get beat 67-42 by Colorado State in the first four. Can we put it like a 2 or 3 year moratorium on Virginia not making the tournament? Would that be okay with everybody? I mean, it's just painful to watch. And until college basketball can try to get a little bit more of the shine back on it, I think less Virginia in the tournament would certainly help everyone's cause or help college basketball's cause to try to get the fans back and not just in March. That was awful last night. And it's a big reason why a lot of people don't consider the tournament starting until tomorrow. All right, so what are some games? What are some games you're hoping you'll get to see down the line? Maybe it's the second round. Maybe it's the Sweet 16. Maybe it's Elite Eight. Heck, maybe it's the Final Four, or maybe it's the title game. But what are some of the games that you're hoping, with the way the brackets are laid out, what are some games that you're hoping you get to see at some point in this NCAA tournament? We know what we get on Thursday and Friday. We talked about those yesterday and some of the more intriguing matchups that are already set in stone or already occurring. So what do you hope you see? So I kind of wrote down, as you move around through each different level, what I hope we see. In the second round, one of the games that I absolutely want to see is Tennessee and Texas, the Rick Barnes Bowl. I think that would be phenomenal to see who could try to outchoke the other. Would it be Rick's old team and the Longhorns, who don't have very good history of NCAA tournament success, or would it be Rick and his Tennessee Volunteers? I think that would be fascinating to watch them. It looked kind of like the Spider-Man meme, where they're kind of pointing me, you, me, that maybe both of them trying to throw the game at the end, trying to lose the game at the end. Oh, you take it. Oh, you take it. Oh, I'll do it. Oh, you'll do it. I think that'd be awesome. North Carolina and Michigan State. North Carolina, the one seed. A lot of people think maybe the weakest one seed, although they're, you know, obviously Purdue and the history that's there. And then Izzo, you know, some people don't think Michigan State deserves to be in the tournament. Otherwise, if it wasn't because their coach is Izzo. But, man, for a second-round game for North Carolina as a one seed to have to possibly put up with the Michigan State Spartans and Tom Izzo, that's a pretty juicy matchup, I think, in the second round. Another one, a team we saw last week kind of burst onto the scene out of the Mountain West, New Mexico. I think New Mexico-Baylor would be a ton of fun to watch. And I put these last two, New Mexico Baylor and then Iowa State Drake, because of the proximity, obviously. But then also New Mexico and Drake, if you're an OSU fan, I would be paying attention to New Mexico Drake, especially Drake. And you ask why? Because that may be where your next head coach is coming from. DeVries at Drake has done a fantastic job. That could be one of those spots that you see the brass at Oklahoma State start to look for a new head coach. So that would be my second round games with different storylines that I would like to watch. Fast forward to next week, Sweet 16. Please give us UConn and Auburn. Connecticut is, I think, a prohibitive favorite, really, in this tournament, coming off the as the defending champs. They seem to have the most complete team. They seem to have the fewest holes in their roster. Obviously, they have plenty of experience back. And then Auburn is just fun. Bruce Pearl is fun. Auburn plays a style that's fun to watch. It can get physical enough for you. I would love to see UConn and Auburn play in the Sweet 16. Another game that I would love to see, and this team is going to come up here in just a second as well, I would love to see Baylor and Arizona play in the Sweet 16 as the 2 and the 3. I think that would be a fascinating matchup with Baylor's young guys and pros. I think Baylor has pros on their team as the young freshmen, and got Arizona with some experience and the firepower that they've got. And then the last one is Creighton and Tennessee. I think a lot of people really like Creighton's chances in that bracket, the Midwest bracket, that who knows what's going to happen. You know, I mentioned Tennessee earlier against Texas, but Tennessee has a pretty sordid NCAA tournament past with Rick Barnes, especially as the head coach. They have bowed out way earlier than they should have a lot of times. Purdue, everyone knows Purdue's struggles in the tournament over the last couple of years. You know, losing as a 3 to a 14, a 2 to a 15, and a 1 to a 16 last year. So that's obviously kind of shaky in a lot of people's minds. So then you start looking who else, and I think Creighton is a popular pick to maybe make it to the Final Four. The local flavor, from Heritage Hall, Trey Alexander. You know, Creighton's one of those teams you kind of know about. They made a little bit of a run last year. So I think that would be an interesting game, see if how shaky Tennessee is, and then to see Creighton if they can fulfill, because I'm telling you, there's going to be a bunch of brackets that have Creighton in the Final Four because of Kansas's struggles. Obviously, McCullough, if you didn't see that, bracket tip. McCullough's not playing throughout the entirety of the tournament for Kansas. Does that make them shaky against Samford? A lot of people thought they already were. So that could be even more shakiness there for the Jayhawks. Gonzaga's been kind of meh. You know, who is coming out of that Midwest? I think Creighton, Tennessee, the winner of that, if that game even transpires, might be your answer. And then finally in the Elite Eight, the game I want to see more than almost any of them, and I've got this team to talk about too in the next little part here, but I would love to see Houston play Kentucky. I know once the brackets lock in tomorrow in the Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge, I know there are going to be probably a higher percentage in our group that pick Houston to be the national champ. It'd be a higher percentage of our group than it will be kind of nationwide. Part of that's because you get to see them, familiarity, and I think a lot of people are rooting for Kelvin. Want to see Kelvin Sampson win a national title with the Houston Cougars. They're the one seed. And then the Kentucky team that is as talented or more talented than anybody in the field, but also young. And, you know, we've seen this in the past where eventually the youth might catch up a little bit with Kentucky. But I think that would be an awesome matchup in the Elite Eight if it happens. Are there some teams that you really haven't watched a lot this year that you're excited about watching? You may have maybe listening to stuff, reading some stuff to fill out your bracket, and trying to figure out, okay, where are we at? I want to see this team. I think they can be good. Do I want them, you know, watch to see? You can't change your mind after you see them, but are there some teams that you really are wanting to watch play because you have maybe an inkling that they might make a run? I've got a couple of those that I have written down. Number one is Florida. Florida seems to have figured it out all the way up to a 7 seed. They're in the finals of the SEC tournament. And Florida Gators, I think, are a popular pick to maybe unseat Kentucky there later on. Can they beat number 2 seed Marquette, who feels a little wobbly without depending on Kolick? So Florida is one of the teams that I really, really want to watch and see if maybe I have them pegged correctly. The other is Arizona. I think Arizona is a fascinating team in this tournament. When you look at what the bracket would be, what their road would be to the Final Four, they're in the West. I think if you happen to get the 1 and 2s playing in the Elite Eight with North Carolina and Arizona being out West, I think there would be a decided home court advantage, probably, even though it's North Carolina. I think you talk about Arizona, I think they're going to have a huge advantage crowd-wise being in the West. And then, not only that, but if they can somehow figure out a way to be able to sneak into the Final Four, I know they'll have an advantage in Scottsdale, in Phoenix, right up the road from Tucson. And with their explosiveness and their ability, I think Arizona is one of those. I can't wait to see kind of where they're at. And then the last question, are there teams that you're having a hard time deciding what you want to do with them? You think they're talented enough to make huge runs, but you're also a little bit leery because maybe their tournament history or what have you. Or maybe a hole in their game that one of their opponents down the line could exploit. I've got two of those, both SEC teams. I mentioned Tennessee. I could absolutely see Tennessee making it to the Final Four. With Dalton Connect, They've played some really, really high-level basketball throughout the season, but they've also they don't have very much tournament success, and Rick Barnes does not have very much tournament success. And then you look at what Mississippi State did to them in the SEC tournament, just absolutely locking them down like they were Virginia or something. So Tennessee is a team that I'm really, really confused about where to either have them making it or where to have them losing and who to have them losing to. Tennessee is a mystery team to me in a lot of ways. And the other one is Kentucky. It's taking everything in my power, everything in my being, not to pick Kentucky to win the whole thing. I think they have the most talent of anybody. And if you don't believe me, just start going through NBA rosters. And this is just like any Kentucky team. Start going through NBA rosters and who are some of the better players in the league, and all of a sudden you go, huh, they went to Kentucky. You don't even remember them. Here's a question. Does anybody remember SGA playing for Kentucky? I mean, like, truly remember that. I mean, we all know that SGA went to Kentucky. Do you remember when he played? Who he played with? Him specifically at Kentucky? Not really. There's a ton of guys like that. You know, Calipari, I guarantee you, there are people in the Bluegrass State that think he has massively underachieved with the amount of talent that he's been able to amass throughout the years at Kentucky, and then just point right to the NBA. And that's where a lot of validation might come for those thoughts and thinking that Calipari has underachieved. So, I mean, I can see him winning it all, and I can see Texas Tech beat him in the second round. I have no idea what to do with Kentucky. Because it feels like boom or bust for me. I don't see Kentucky just kind of making it to the Sweet 16 and losing when their seed says they're supposed to. I think they're either going to make like a 2014 type run with the Harrison twins playing for the title, or they're going to bow out really early. That Tech game, because I don't think NC State's going to beat Tech, and that Tech game scares me to death about making Kentucky go way, way, way far in the bracket. But if you could tell me that they won that game, then I might would put them all the way into the title. Kentucky is the one for me that I just – they're the ones that scare me the most about where to put them, because I'm afraid if I decide they're going to get knocked out early, I'm going to be kicking myself for not picking them like I wanted to. But if I pick them like I wanted to, I'm going to be scared to death that they get knocked out early. And they are, to me, the enigma of the entire tournament and the hardest one to figure out exactly where they are. I mean, I'm telling you right now, if they were in the Midwest bracket down there with Purdue and all those teams, I would easily have them advance to the Final Four. But they're not. And so Kentucky is going to be the one team that I go back and forth on until 11 o'clock in the morning when I have to 100% decide what the bracket looks like and how far I have the Wildcats going. Speaking of bluegrass, thick, fertile bluegrass. We don't have a bunch of that here, but we got a whole bunch of Bermuda grass. And listen, I know most of you have gotten your lawn sprayed already. You know, I was walking around the golf course this morning down the cart pass and kind of looking as the sun started to come up and thinking, man, there's some green grass starting to pop. Well, what does green grass need? It needs fertilizer, and it needs to keep the insects and the grubs and all of that out of it. How do you do that? I don't personally know, but you know what? I know the guy that does. Scott Kelly at Superior Lawns. He's got great granular application programs, whether it be insecticides to discourage the grubs and other insects, fertilizer that'll add some zing to that yard. I mean, just I can't even possibly tell you. In our old house at Sayre, we had nothing but sand and nothing but sand burrs and nothing but just stickers all over our yard. Called Scott. He came over and sprayed, and it was within a couple of weeks, you walk out and you got barefoot and you're thinking, you know what? I trust it. The grass is green. The grass is healthy. The grass is choking out the stickers. And so the spraying and the fertilizing that Superior Lawns has, it's unmatched. Elk City, Canute, Cheyenne, and Sayre. Give Scott a call, 580-799-5670. When we come back, question on the text line, who is the Cinderella? And also another text that's very, very interesting, I think. The difference between OU football and OU basketball. And maybe why there wasn't a whole bunch of conversation about OU getting knocked out of the tournament, because nobody really cares. Wrapping up a Wednesday here. Thunder tonight right here on these airwaves against the Utah Jazz. 5:30 for the pregame, 7 o'clock for the tip. I know you're going to be hearing about it all throughout the day, but 3,000th broadcast in the NBA for Matt Pinto, radio voice of the Oklahoma City Thunder. That is unbelievable consistency. He's awesome to listen to, does it all by himself. It's fantastic. So congratulations to him. Thunder tonight right here, 98.1 FM and 1240 AM. You can hear that against the Utah Jazz. All right, so we got a question. Who's the Cinderella in the tournament? I guess my question to that would be, what counts? What seed does it have to be considered Cinderella? While that's being thought about, got another text talking about the Sooners being left out. It says, imagine if the football team, if Oklahoma's football team goes 9-3 in the SEC and gets left out of the playoff. Outrage will ensue. I think that's probably true, especially depending on the losses and how everything kind of shakes out. I think if you put that to 10-2, there would absolutely be outrage if the Sooners aren't in the playoff in their first year as the SEC team. Whereas, think about the basketball team. 120 had zero losses against Tier 2, 3, and 4. And that was the point, I think, at the end of the week last week where the question was, is Oklahoma in? That's why I thought they would be. Because every loss they had was to a quad one team, they were undefeated against quad two, three, and four. And at that time, the only teams that could say that in the entire country, it was like Houston, UConn, Auburn, Oklahoma, and there might have been one other going into the conference tournaments last week that could brag that they had not lost to a quad two, three, or four team. And obviously Oklahoma ends the season that way. And then, of course, the injuries that didn't take them to account, which they say they do. Clearly they don't, at least in OU's case. And I think that maybe it was the biggest gripe for Porter Mosier yesterday in his press conference, kind of wrapping up the season, was it's like the criteria are different for each and every team. If there was one set criteria, then you would know what you have to do, what you can't do. Vice versa, and he continually, you know, had the point of we were in every single bracket, every single issue or version of bracketology until we weren't. The only time that OU was out was when the real bracket came out. So I think that's probably a frustration. But once again, like I said, we're to the point with 68 that if you can't be one of the top 36 at-larges, who cares? Go win another game. Beat Tech on your home floor. Beat Kansas on your home floor. Beat Houston on your home floor before the injuries happen. And we're not sitting here having to have that conversation. Oklahoma's in the tournament. You move on. All right. Cinderella-wise, to make, say, a sweet 60. Here's the deal. The first time in my initial bracket, I had an 11 seed in the Final Four. I have since backtracked on that. For right now, it still could happen because I can't decide who's coming out of the Midwest. But even though they're an 11 seed, does Oregon count? You know, Oregon as an 11, or say Michigan State. Would anybody be shocked if Izzo had his team in the Sweet 16 beating North Carolina, knocking them out? North Carolina feels like a shaky one, and then from there, who knows? Those two, though, are, you know, Power Five. I have a hard time calling them, you know, true Cinderellas. So if you're talking about, if you can kind of limit yourself to the smaller schools, I think New Mexico has a chance to be that team. because of the shakiness of both Gonzaga and Kansas. Obviously, Kansas. I think, gosh, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility we see McNeese and Samford playing to go to the Sweet 16. And if something kooky happens with Purdue, then all of a sudden you might have a 12 or a 13 playing a 9 or an 8 to get into the Elite 8. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I'll tell you what, I don't think anything's out of the realm of possibility in that Midwest bracket because of Purdue's history and Tennessee's history in the tournament, even though they're the one and the two. Heck, I think Purdue, when all the brackets are filled out and all the brackets are turned in and all the brackets are locked tomorrow morning when the tournament starts, I think there's a chance that Purdue is the least picked number one seed of all time to make it to the Final Four. Now, I'm not sitting here, and I would never call Purdue a Cinderella, but I think I don't think people have any faith in Purdue. So maybe they become underrated because of the past couple of years and being overrated, if that makes sense. Looking at the top half, I don't really – maybe James Madison. Is JMU a chance with Wisconsin, you know, a Duke team that can be here and there? That could be a look at a Sweet 16. I think they'd have a hard time then if seeds held with Houston. But I think James Madison is one that you could see possibly into the Sweet 16. I don't feel like the 13s through the 16s. I don't think they're as strong as they have been in recent years. I just don't. I think you got to get to a 12, like a Grand Canyon maybe, or like a McNeese with Will Wade, before you get a team that you could really see making a long, long run. And part of that's because of maybe who they would get to play. You know, some people like Charleston. I think Charleston and Alabama is going to be one of the funnest games of the entire first round because of the style of play. Charleston plays like Alabama. They're just not as good at it as Alabama. And that might be 95 to 85. Harken back to the late 80s, early 90s of some teams. But as far as a true, true Cinderella, if it has to be, say, a double-digit seed to make a long run into, say, an Elite Eight or even Final Four, I would probably, if you had to pin me down, and if Oregon counts, I would say Oregon. If Oregon doesn't count because they're Power Five, I would say New Mexico would be the two teams that would suffice to if you're thinking like Elite Eight or Final Four, not just to the Sweet 16. I would say those two 11 seeds would be my choice if it has to get that far. As a Cinderella. So, that's, man, we're almost there. We'd be like an hour away if it was tomorrow from the madness beginning. All right, Thunder tonight, right here on these airwaves. Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. I'll repost that link on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. Everybody have a wonderful Wednesday. Should be beautiful weather outside. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!